The easy way. Actually, you've got a choice. Do you want the easy way or the hard way tonight?
Hard way.
Ah, come on. You're not going to give it the easy way. The easy way to meditate. So, meditation is just like relaxing the body. We learn how to relax the mind. Now, sometimes that people feel that they understand how to relax the body, but there's so many people in our world today don't even know how to go to sleep at night. They toss and turn, have insomnia, and they still don't know how to relax enough even just to have a good night's sleep. So here we're going to learn how to relax the body and also relax the mind. Now, when you relax the body, you take away all the pressure, all the tensions, all the pulling, the squashing, and all the irritations which are on the body. And we do exactly the same later on with the mind, to take away all the pressure off our mind. All the irritations, all the have to do this and have to get that, and have to get rid of stuff. Because you may be able to sit down and comfortably, but can your mind also just rest and take it easy and chill out? And this is what we're going to be able to learn. Now, just the same, when you relax the body, you have to get it reasonably comfortable and safe. Same with the mind. We have to make it comfortable and safe. And all the pressures on it, we try and relieve. Now, all the pressures on your mental world, that's mostly the past and the future. All the things which happened to you so far in your life, or even today, all of that which keeps dragging you back into the past. But if you really know about the meaning of the past is just a bunch of old dead coffins which you carry around with you. These are dead moments which should have been buried or cremated a long time ago. So why do you drag all these coffins of dead experiences behind you? You can visualize yourself. There you are with this chain of 1, 10, 20, 2,000 coffins you're dragging behind you in life. All this stuff which happened to you, all the stuff which you did. Is that a wise way to live a life? Is that one of the reasons why that life is just so hard, dragging yourself through the day? And all you need to do is to let go of all those heavy memories from the past. You can. Why not? And one of the reasons why you can't let these things go, otherwise called forgiving, is because we think we're not allowed to. That somehow we should keep being bothered by these things. The first way of letting go, or forgiving, is to know it's permissible. It's okay. It can be done. And number two, once you know it can be done, number two, you deserve to do this. It doesn't matter who did what to whom and why they did it. We all make mistakes in life. So why not just allow mistakes to happen, and instead of worrying about them and trying to fix them, just walk on and leave them behind. Here we go again, one of the first little similes. Oh, I always tell these similes. The two chicken farmers. You know that chicken farmer story? These are for the new ones who haven't been here before. There were these two chicken farmers. This is for Korean TV as well. Hey, two chicken farmers. The first chicken farmer gets up early in the morning, goes into the chicken shed with the basket to collect the produce of the night before. And what does the chicken farmer put in the basket? The chicken shit. And he brings the chicken shit back into the house with him. Makes a big stink in the whole room, and the family are not very happy with him. If you brought chicken shit into your house, what would your partner say? Chicken farmer number two takes a basket into the shed and fills the basket full of eggs. He leaves the chicken shit in the shed to rot. And he brings the eggs back into the house, where he makes a nice omelette for his family's breakfast and sells the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. that is a clever chicken farmer. And the meaning of that simile is when you remember your past, what do you put in a basket and bring home with you? Yeah, chicken shit. You're all shit collectors, aren't you? Isn't that stupid? That's the most stupid thing to do. If you are going to remember your past, leave all that negative stuff in the past to rot. And instead remember all of the beautiful, happy things which happened. The eggs. We bring the eggs back into our present moment, into our house with us, into our life. We leave the rotten negative stuff in the past to rot. And people who keep on telling me that no, you learn from the past. You do not learn from the mistakes of the past. You learn from the successes of the past. Imagine that you look back in the last week and you thought, what worked? Why did you have a happy hour? Why was it just so successful and so joyful? And learn from that. And then you learn the secret of happiness. So if you are going to remember the past, at least remember the good stuff instead of the rotten stuff. And if you notice, it's the rotten stuff which keeps on obsessing us, which we can't let go of. And that's a ridiculous thing. And the second way of letting go of the rotten stuff of life is, I told these two psychologists in a conference in Sydney some years ago, it is classical psychology to, in order to let go of the past, you've got to acknowledge it first of all. And one of the best ways of doing that is writing on a piece of paper. But the Ajahn Brahm method is specific to the type of paper you use to write down all the terrible things which happened to you in the past. Don't use any type of paper. Use toilet paper. And use a brown pen. So when you write down all the terrible things which have happened to you, what someone said to you, what someone did to you, get out the toilet paper, brown pen, and write it down in detail. Because when you use toilet paper, when it's in brown ink, you make an association with the other brown stuff which goes on toilet paper. Now look, if you, even if you are a member of Greenpeace and World for Wildlife, Save the Planet, whatever it is you are supporting. Even those extreme greenies, whenever they don't use both sides of the toilet paper, do you? You're wasting trees. You should look at the other clean part on the other side. Use both parts of the toilet paper and save the planet. But no one does that. Just a tiny bit of brown on the toilet paper and you throw it away. So the connection between writing all these things on toilet paper in brown ink means that this is not the sort of stuff you should hold in your pocket and keep. So you write it down, read it, and then you do the next most important part, you do the letting go ceremony. You go to the special temple for letting go of these things. called the loo, the toilet. And you go to the cubicle, you read it out again. Once, first of all, read out all the terrible things which are worrying you, which are causing you pain from the past, all the problems and worries. And after reading them, you do the ceremony. You put them in the bowl, and there's a different button on the top, and you press that. And whoosh, this wonderful chanting, whoosh, as it goes round the bend and out of your life forever. Because that's the place where such things belong. In the loo, away from you. You don't keep it. The little ceremony like that actually works. I mean, you block the toilet quite a few times and you have to pay a lot of money for plumbers, but it's worth it, much cheaper than going to a psychologist. But what... What are you doing? You're actually letting go of this stupid stuff of the past, which is what we have to do in meditation. To let go of the past, just for a few minutes. And as for the future, all this stuff you're worried about, what might happen next. Who knows what might happen next? No one can know. That story which comes to my mind of this guy who came to tell me, this is in a monastery some years ago, that he was a businessman, he was in India, he was left the hotel, booked a taxi to take him to the airport in Mumbai. And, you know, the taxi came in plenty of time to get him to the airport, in time to check in and everything. But the taxi driver got lost, because many of the taxi drivers are migrants. He didn't know his way around Bombay. And so he was driving around, getting lost. Time was going past, the clock was ticking, and the passenger, this businessman, was getting more and more concerned that he may lose his, miss his flight. And they were still a long way from the airport. And he told me the only hope he had after a while was the flight would be delayed, which happened a lot in India those days. But actually, when they did get to the airport, he found for once his flight left on time. Because through the window of the taxi, he could see his flight take off. And the stupid taxi driver had made him lose his flight and all the problems of getting connections and missing appointments. He was so upset and angry at the taxi driver. He was shouting and swearing at the taxi driver as he was looking through the window and he saw his flight, his plane, come crashing down to the ground with all on board killed. And then he looked at the taxi driver. "You wonderful man. I love you so much. Here's the tip, $50, take $100. He saved his life by being late. So why are we always worried about missing appointments? It could have saved your life. Why are we always so concerned about the future when we don't know which way it's going to turn? For our benefit or for our trouble? Who knows? So that way we can just let go of all the worry of the future. And at last we can just be here in this moment. You've worked so hard to get here. You've traveled so far in your life. You've surmounted so many obstacles, gone through such difficult times and happy times too. And now you're here. Why not just sit down, rest, and enjoy this moment instead of always worrying about what's going to come next or all the problems, all the obstacles you've overcome so far in your life? How about just stopping and just be? Not going anywhere. Not trying to do things or change things, but just being. And sometimes people say, no, it's not good enough, I have to change this and do this. It's because you don't understand what perfection is and what beauty is. I always like coming here and saying about the forest. I said this to the Korean TV crew just an hour or two ago, just before sunset at Bodhinyana Monastery. I said, look at all the trees in our forest. There's not one which is dead straight. They're all crooked and bent. They've all got scars on the bark, which is why they're beautiful trees. I like the ones which are the most crooked. I don't know about you. They're the beautiful ones. So if you are crooked, if you are bent, if you are damaged, then you are like the beautiful trees in the natural forest. You belong. In fact, the more crooked you are, the more beautiful you are. So, you wives, if you've got a crooked husband, he's the most beautiful. If your wife is all bent and damaged good, she is the most charming tree in the forest. What I was saying there, why are you trying to change yourself? If you come here to improve yourself, you've come to the wrong place. What's wrong with you? Why on earth do people want to improve themselves? You're good enough. So, this is all about allowing yourself to be. So you let go of all the past and all the future. And you allow yourself, whoever you are, just to be. You open the door of your heart to yourself, exactly as you are. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. You're just good enough in this moment. This is not the time for changing or growing or doing anything. It's a time for resting, relaxing the body, relaxing the mind. And what happens is because you stop doing stuff, you start to relax and your energies come back again. You're all so tired. I don't mean physically, mentally. Struggling to get by in life. Struggling to be loved and to love and to do the right thing. Such a struggle. And now no more struggle. You can just be. So a lot of the pressure is off your mental world. When the pressure is off and you relax, you start to get energy again. Literally, your mind wakes up. You become what they call these days mindful. You become aware. It's wonderful when people get into this meditation business. Everything starts to look more beautiful. Food tastes more delicious. You can feel more. You're more alive because your mind has got more energy. You can actually be more in life. You know, when people get depressed, it's like they live in a mist, like in darkness, like in a twilight zone. Everything is grey, nothing sort of excites you. You can't even feel the cool of the wind, everything is dull. But when you meditate, you start to literally wake up and become aware again. Food tastes delicious. Even your old life looks so beautiful. You didn't realize she was so beautiful. Because even Pinder looks like such a hot young guy. Well, I'm buddy. So you get to know what I mean. You start to sort of alive in a way, you start to see beautiful things. You become mindful again. And I'm saying this because actually, especially in nature, just in Bodhidharma Monastery afternoon, it's a beautiful afternoon. It's a gorgeous monastery to see trees at this time of the year. We've had a lot of rain early on in this month. In the last few days it's been warm and sunny. And so it's at its best. All the grass is up, the green, you see the lakes, and watching the sunset this evening. It was marvelous. There's so much happiness and joy there for the taking when you're awake to it. That's what happens when you meditate. You become really awake. You start to notice not just the beauty in the forest, you start to notice the beauty in yourself. No, you're not that bad. In fact, you're pretty good. You're like a forest. The forest of Bodhidharma has had its bushfires, it's had its droughts, it's had its storms. Just like you've had your problems in your life. Sicknesses, difficulties. That's what makes it beautiful. And then you can become at peace with yourself. You realize you are more than good enough. When you become at peace with yourself, then you have peace. Peace of mind. So you have this wonderful place you can rest and be totally accepted, totally at peace. In this moment, just being, resting. And you feel so relieved, relaxed, energized afterwards. But when the meditation is over, you feel, oh, just like a new person. And then you have to go off into your life, and then you get tired and worn out again. But you've always got this meditation space. You can always recharge your energies and get more perspective on the meaning of life, who you are, and how to be at peace with yourself and all the other beings. Easy. So, any questions? No? Good. Let's do it. Very good. So don't worry, anybody here. I will guide you through all of this. So easy. So I'm going to go and sit down. And I will guide. Just the way you sit. Sitting on a chair is fine. Sitting on the floor is fine. Wherever you feel comfortable is okay. Do you want to come down? Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Question?
No.
Complain?
No. Just stop the struggle.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. I agree with that. Okay, I'm going to go and sit down over here. Ring the bell. Very good. You can sit down anywhere. Okay. If we turn the lights off, they
no, I've asked David to leave them on.
Okay, it's okay. So, I can see what you get up to now. Oh, well, okay. No, you won't.
Okay.
Turning the lights on. Right, hi. Okay.
No, we want the lights on.
Okay. That's okay. Are you okay with the lights on or off?
Yes, the lady said she wanted a microphone for you or something.
Okay.
No, that's okay. Leave the lights, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's okay, just once. For all the anxious people will be
okay.
Well,
okay, very good. Very good. Okay. So if you'd like to close your eyes, with your eyes closed, it's just the same as if you're in a dark room. With your eyes closed, you can imagine yourself to be anywhere. Sometimes, even in a busy place, you can imagine yourself to be in a cave. Just hear in the distance the sound of the traffic a long way away. But you're inside. Place of peace. And when your eyes are closed, you have literally more space in your brain for feeling the sensations in your own body. So how does your body feel right now with your eyes closed? Now, if you can make your body more comfortable by moving, please do so. You can wiggle the bottom, fidget it to get the most comfortable position. Just move the legs, cough if you need to. Where you put your hands is what for you is the most comfortable position. There is no magic position which every meditator puts a hand in. It is a myth when people say it has to be this way or that way. Just feel the back and the shoulders to make sure they're relaxed. You can move them, just stretch them. Because it's important you are careful with your body. And careful means full of care. You're going to be sitting quietly for half an hour. You've got to get yourself reasonably comfortable. And once you think the body is relaxed, think again. There's always one part of your body which is still aching or irritated, or maybe even in pain. Now I want you to be aware of that part of your body. Like you fill your whole mind, like you fill a cup to the brim of that particular feeling. Because when you're fully aware of it, you have what we call the opportunity for feedback. Like a dial on the dashboard of your car. You can see whether that irritation, that pain, gets worse or gets better. See what you need to do, the attitude to make it better, more relaxed. Whatever the irritation is, see if you can try just to let it be. Not be so afraid. Open up. Take away the pressure. Release any tugging or pushing. And the mindfulness, the awareness, gives you feedback. You can feel that irritation or pain getting less. You are learning how to relax and ease tense parts of your own body. And you keep on relaxing that one part of the body which is the most irritating as much as you can.
when that part of the body is relaxed and move to another part. Please be aware of feeling sensations in the body. It also means that it takes you away from thinking. You feel. And relax those sensations. Awareness allows you to have this dal, this meter, which shows you whether it's getting more tense or more relaxed. By little trial and error, you soon learn it is letting things be, kindness, peace, which allows these things to relax and ease. If ever you have any sicknesses, even things like cancer, be aware of the tumour, the disease, the lack of balance in the body. You can relax it just by being aware and learning just how to let things be. A great deal of healing happens. And I stay with my body until it feels tingly. It's a very delightful, relaxed feeling. Still with my body, with the sensations, continuing to relax and relax and relax. My body is relaxed, then I can let it go and look at my emotional, my mental world, all of the thoughts of the past and the future, and fantasies and dreams. And I do the same. I regard the past as irritation, the future worries as sicknesses. I look at them and learn how to relax them, to let them go. Past is like pressure on you. Future worries like irritations. By learning how to let them be. Not to fight, not to try and get rid of things, but just to relax. You find the past and the future get weaker and weaker until they just vanish. All you are aware of is this moment called now. Hearing my voice, the tick of the clock, feelings in the body, just whatever's happening now. And just relaxing, letting it be. Please enjoy. Enjoy just being here. Whatever is happening to you right now, even if it's a thought in the mind, just let it be. Don't criticize it. Don't feel bad. Don't feel you have to get rid of things. If there are thoughts, imagine they are 2 foot in front of you and you're apart from them. You're not inside the thoughts, you're looking at them from a distance. You're not a part of the thoughts. You're an observer, watching from a distance. Then it's easy to let them go. want something to watch. Be aware of your breath coming into your body. Be aware of the breath going out naturally, don't force it. And as you breathe in, you can note to yourself breathing in peace. As you breathe out, note to yourself, let go. Breathing in peace. Feel the peace. Breathe out, let go. Feel you letting go of something. Breathing in peace. Breathe out. Let go. What you need to do to make your peacefulness start, go deeper and deeper into rest and ease and stillness. If you're aware of how much peace you have, you'll soon learn how to become more peaceful. Thank you. even be aware of the beginning of an in-breath. Just start. All the feelings of one natural in-breath to the very end. The feelings of the out-breath from the beginning to the end. And even noticing the space, the forces between an in-breath and an out-breath. Between the out-breath and the in-breath. Continuing to relax as much as you can. If you can let go of controlling so much, don't try to relax, just let go of controlling. See what happens. It's like this supervisor always telling you what to do and how things should be. You can notice that control freak inside of you and just soften her. Or him. So you can just be. Be who you are. At peace at this moment. open your eyes yet. Just how do you feel? How relaxed, how peaceful are you? Don't worry about judging if it could have got more peaceful or less. Just know how you are. How much peace of mind is there? Enjoy it. Going to ring the gong 3 times. Please keep your eyes closed until the last ringing of the gong fades away, and let that take you out for the meditation, for the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong. Because I have to look at each one of you. Very good. Okay, there we are. Very good. See if we have any questions for today. Any questions in the box there? Okay, we can finish early then. Good night. Not later, we've got to stop that. Yeah. Are there any questions from here?
Because you mentioned it just now.
Forgiveness. Okay. It's such an easy thing to do, to forgive. And it's just a hard thing not to forgive. Whatever anybody has done to you, whatever they did, it was their fault, not yours. So why do you always have to suffer? You didn't do anything wrong, they did. But why do you always have to suffer for it? So the reason is because we're stupid. And I often say that, suppose like somebody cheated you. And they cheated you, and maybe you lost some money or whatever. And that was a long time ago. And every time you remember it, they hurt you again. To sum this up very simply, someone calls you an idiot. And you think, why do they call me an idiot? I'm not an idiot. They've got no right to call me an idiot. It's rude to call me an idiot. And then you finally work out they've just called you an idiot 3 more times. Every time you remember it, they're calling you an idiot again. That proves that they were right. So why do people get so upset by these things? So it is because they cannot just let these things go. So every time you carry around the pain of the past, that you don't forgive somebody or you don't forgive yourself, what it means is you have more unnecessary suffering. So what we do in, one of the nice things I found about Buddhism when I first got into it, was we don't have anything called punishment in Buddhism. Whenever anyone does any mistake, all that happens to them is they're forgiven. And they learn from it. And it's called, in Buddhism, it's called the AFL code. Acknowledge, forgive,
and learn. And the story I'd like to tell about this is the story of this young man who was training to become a monk in my monastery. And everyone who stays in a Buddhist monastery, one of the important rules they have to keep is not eating in the afternoon. And some people say, well, why can't you eat, you know, in the afternoon or evening or night time? And the answer is, look at me. If I ate in the afternoon and evening as well, I'd be in bigger trouble than I am already. But actually, I did read. I don't know if you saw this article. Science has discovered that people who are overweight do not get dementia.
Yeah.
There we go. You see, so I'm fighting dementia. But anyway, look, I keep on telling people that this is not fact. It's not fact at all. It's what happens. I've been a monk now over 40 years. And every year you're a monk, you get more compassionate, more kind. Every year your heart gets a bit bigger. And after 40 years, my heart is now so big, it's pushing out my tummy. It can't go any other way. So this is not fat. This is just a big heart. And that's what I was talking about. Anyone else? That's why I always tell people, any monk who comes here, Rachel, don't trust a skinny monk. The fat ones, they're the happy, kind ones, aren't they? Have you noticed that in the past? Yeah, she's nodding her head. Exactly. So anyway, I'm fighting dementia. That's what I'm doing. Anyway, what was I going to say? I forgot.
Not eating in the afternoon.
That's right. Thank you so much. you're quite fat, so that's why you remembered. No, so this little trainee, not even a novice yet. So he came up to me one day in the morning time. He said, Ajahn Brahm, I've hardly slept all night. Ajahn Brahm, I feel so guilty. I said, what did you do? He said, yesterday evening, when no one was watching, I crept into the kitchen in Bodhidharma Monastery and I made myself a sandwich and I ate it. I broke my rules. I'm a terrible disciple of yours. I'm sorry. And he felt so guilty, of eating a sandwich. And so what I told him, I said, okay, wonderful, you've let me know. That's wonderful. Get it off your chest. Let somebody know. Now, I said, there's all this other stuff which we can eat, as you'll find out in a few minutes. The chocolate, I can't eat chocolate cake, but I can eat chocolate, cheese, orange juice, apple juice, you name it. But not everything, but there's a lot of stuff you can get away with. It's called loopholes. Now, being a monk for 40 years, I know all the loopholes. So, these are loopholes. Eat some of that stuff and have more for lunchtime, then you don't feel so hungry. You won't need to have a sandwich afterwards. Okay, you can go. He looked at me and said, is that it? I can just go? He said, yeah. You've acknowledged your fault, you've been forgiven, you're learning from it, so you don't need to break the precept again. You can go now. He said, no. He said, that's not good enough. He said, I need some penance, some punishment. He said, I know my character. If you don't punish me, I'll do the same tomorrow. some people are like that. So he put me on the spot. I had to think up a penalty, a punishment for him. And it just so happened, it was a coincidence, that morning, or that evening before, I was reading a novel by, I think it was Robert Hughes, called The Fatal Shore, about the early history of Australia and the punishments they used to give to convicts who broke the rules. And so I looked at this guy and said, okay, I've got a traditional Australian punishment for you. So 50 strokes of the cat. And this, you should have seen this guy. All the colour drained from his face. His lips started to quiver. And his pupils dilated. Because he actually thought that in a Buddhist monastery that you could get flogged. It's a wonderful moment. And then I explained to him what 50 strokes of the cat mean in a Buddhist monastery. In that time, we did have two cats. Find one of them and just stroke it. One, two, three. And learn some kindness and compassion. Because that's the reason why you can't forgive yourself and forgive others. You haven't got enough kindness and compassion. So that's why that was his punishment. He had to go and find the cat and give it 50 strokes to learn more compassion. And then maybe he could be compassionate to himself and forgive himself. Why are people so cruel? Punishment doesn't make you learn. All it teaches you is not to get caught the next time. How many times do speed cameras teach you not to slow down? And how many times do they teach you to understand where their positions so you know where they are so you don't get caught next time? So that's what punishment does. It just makes you more smart in not getting caught. But when we have actually forgiveness and kindness, then why do we want to do those things? Why do you want to hurt another person? Why do you want to hurt yourself? It doesn't make any sense. But we make mistakes from time to time. So we have to allow ourselves to make mistakes and allow others to make mistakes. And that's what I mean by forgiveness. We have the kindness to realize that forgiveness is actually makes people make less mistakes. Kindness does. And secondly, his wisdom knows we all do make mistakes, so we have to allow for that. Hands up anyone here who's never made a mistake. One of the nice things is that we like talking about our mistakes in Buddhism. I like telling people all the silly mistakes which I have done. One of my famous mistakes was I was doing a marriage service once. That's part of my job, to bless marriages. And I was very tired, exhausted one afternoon, doing too much. And when I started the chanting, I did the wrong chanting. Instead of doing the chanting for marriages, I did the funeral chant for this happy couple. Yeah. And because it was in a language they didn't understand, I got away with it. So I gave them the funeral chanting at their marriage. You know the amazing thing? They're still happy married. I had a funeral once. There was a Sri Lankan young man. One of his parents died. And he said, Ajahn, can you do the funeral for them? I said, yeah, certainly. But I'm getting rid of a rush. I forgot to ask the name of the person who died. So at the service, I got up to the lectern, welcomed everybody to this sad occasion of the death of this disciple's mother. It's very sad that she's just died. And this old lady got up in the front. She stood up right in the middle of my speech and said, it's not me who's dead, it's my husband. I just got the wrong one. It's a 50-50 chance. Or this other wedding which I did. It was this Australian guy was marrying this young Thai girl. And as they came into the hall, this old Australian next to this young Thai, and I said, are you the father of the groom?
Oh, no.
He said, no, I am the groom. Well, he was more than old enough to be the grandfather. That was good fun. So I make those mistakes. Do you make those mistakes? So what do? You don't get upset at them. You forgive them. Acknowledge. Forgive. And laugh. The AFL code. And when you laugh at mistakes instead of taking them so seriously, it's so easy to forgive. Yeah, but sometimes some of the mistakes people make, or the mistakes you make, sometimes they can really hurt people. Years and years ago, there was this young woman came up. This was about 20, 30 years ago. Because I've been coming to this place over 28 years. I was from the very beginning, actually before this place was began. I remember the Armadu group when it was just a twinkle in somebody's eye. Before it was born. But there was this one lady came up to to me once, and she was very, very almost suicidal, because she was working up the north, you know, in some mines. This was about 20, 30 years ago. And just, you know, one day, it wasn't fly-in, fly-out time, they just, you know, went up there for months at a time. And so that one afternoon, nothing to do, she said, let's go for a ride. And her, you know, girlfriend said, ah, no, I just want to stay and watch a movie. She said, no, come, no, I want to watch a movie with my boyfriend. She said, no, bring your boyfriend with us, we'll go for a ride. So she talked her girlfriend and her girlfriend's boyfriend for going on this ride. And she had a rollover. And I think her girlfriend became paraplegic, the girlfriend's boyfriend died. And like what happened so often, the driver was unscathed. And she felt so guilty, as you can imagine. She pressed her best friend into coming on this drive with her. And as a result, she was paraplegic, and her boyfriend was killed. And she felt so guilty for that. And of course, it was so hard for me to convince her to forgive herself. She didn't know her intention. It's just sometimes, you know, these things happen in life. It's part of life. The accidents happen. And I was telling her that, you know, one of the problems is we expect from life things which it can never give. From time to time we do things, and it's totally not intentional at all. It's just accidents. That's why they're called accidents. No one's to blame. And to first of all, to tell her that this is life. It happens to this person, that person, now it's happened to you. But you're not responsible for this. You never intended to do this. But I said that still that somehow people feel they have some penance to make up for this. And I said, well, you can't bring that guy back to life. You can't actually bring that your best friend's legs back to life. What you can do, you can actually volunteer or change your job and start to work over at Shenton Park in the rehab. So actually to do something for others. Because instead of actually feeling guilty, instead of getting angry, one of the best things to do is actually to do something. Get out there, and if you feel that you're responsible for something, see if you can do something to help similar people in similar situations. So that's what she did. She became a nurse at the rehab. Just in order to sort of feel that, you know, that she could somehow pay back, you know, the hurt which she didn't cause but which she was a part of. And that's a far more positive thing than to get angry, to get depressed, is actually do something. So if you've done something wrong, you know, if you've run over the cat, then go and give a donation to the cat's home or whatever. So don't just try and say, I'm going to forgive myself. Sometimes, I don't know, it's our nature. We need to try and make some recompense for whatever we have done. So, and if other people have done something wrong to you, just they're human beings. That most people don't mean to hurt one another. It's just our nature of life. So that is where I started developing the fact you don't have to be perfect. You're not perfect. Other people aren't perfect. You make mistakes. I make mistakes. And so I developed the what I call the 70% rule. And the 70% rule, it came about when I was a school teacher. Before I became a monk, I taught in a high school. And that was one of the reasons why I became a monk, why I left the world. Teaching teenagers is enough to know. To make anyone want to leave the world and tear their hair out. I'll tear their hair out as well. But when I was teaching teenagers, part of that was to set the exam. And I've never set an exam before. And it was in maths. It was actually end of term exam. And I asked the senior teacher, what should I do? And they said, well, try and make the difficulty not too hard, not too easy, because if it's too easy and the students get 90%, 95%, the exam has got no meaning to it. If it's too hard, so they only score 30-40%, then they'll lose their motivation and confidence. They'll come away thinking maths is too hard, they can't do it anymore. So he said, try to get the average score to be 70%. If the average score is 70%, all your students will think, yeah, I can do maths. 7 out of 10 is not a bad score. and the 30% where they make mistakes, that's where I, as their teacher, get the feedback. I can find out their weak points, what they never understood in my lessons, so the next lessons I can address those weak points. And so that became a very wise way of setting exams. Try and aim for 70%. So people get encouraged, but also they have the opportunity to learn. And I can actually find out weak points. And I realise that's the same in life. If you always score 100%, you have a wonderful life, but it's a waste of time. You learn absolutely nothing. And if you only get 30-40% in life, you get quite depressed. If your score is 70%, yeah, you have a lot of happiness, a lot of success, but you also have a lot of failures as well and difficulties. Those 30% where it's difficult, that is where you learn. So if you've got a husband who's only 70%, he's perfect. If you've got a wife who's 100%, dump her, you're not learning anything. So the 70% rule, because you're not perfect, they're not perfect, but where we make mistakes, that's where we learn. So we don't need to get angry at mistakes when somebody does something wrong. And even if it hurts us, that is where we can learn and grow. And sometimes, oh, there's this one guy I know, I just saw him, what was it, last month I was in Indonesia giving lots of talks. And this guy, he was in some sort of business. What was it? It was some printing business. And his boss, this was in Jakarta. If you think you've got a hard boss, listen to this one. His boss called him into the office and said, "I want you to resign." And this guy said, "Why?" And his boss took a revolver out from the drawer and put it right in front of his head and said, "This is why." And he had to resign, sign his resignation at the point of a gun. Now that is a tough boss. And this was, you can't do anything about this, this is in Indonesia. So he had to resign. And he had a big mortgage, a wife and two kids. Now about 6 or 7 at the time. And he thought, "I'm done, I've finished. The end of my life." But what he did, you know, he sat down and thought, you know, that's really unfair and just really cruel and a very hard thing to do. But he thought, okay, what am I going to do? He had all his experience, he had all his contacts, so he started up a rival business. He was very good at it. And now he is multi-millionaire. He says thank you to his boss for sacking him. Because if he hadn't been forced to resign, he'd have just been working for a salary and just getting by, but not being as wealthy as he is. So he's not angry with his boss, he actually thanks him. "Thank you for sacking me at the point of a gun." Mm-hmm. So, if someone has done something cruel to you, what do you do? Sometimes you make use of that. You turn it to your advantage. But getting angry, getting upset, "They shouldn't do this to me, why did they do this to me, I'm going to take them to court, I'm going to sue them, I'm going to do this," does that help at all? No. What does help is you learn from it. Life is sometimes 70%. You don't always get your own way, things happen in life, but you grow from it, you learn from it, you become a much better human being because of that. It's just like the story of the guy who went to the cinema, and right in front of him was a dog in the cinema. But this was quite amazing because the dog was really enjoying the movie. Honestly, every time there was a frightening part of the movie, you see the dog's ears were up and his head went rigid, all the hair started coming up. Every time there was a sad part of the movie, you know, the dog actually could see tears coming from his eyes. He was actually crying. And every time there was a really funny part of the movie, the dog was laughing his head off. And so the guy sitting behind was just so amazed at this dog that when the movie was over, he had to ask the dog, "That's the most amazing thing I've seen. That's incredible. Your dog really enjoyed that movie." And the owner said, "Yeah, it is amazing," because he hated the book. Okay, that's last Friday night's talking all about us. Because I haven't told a joke yet. So I'll be very restrained. So are you going to forgive me for that? You better. Because I'm not going to change. So whenever anything wrong goes on in life, just you can learn from it. Which means you're forgiving it. If anyone else has really, really, really hurt you, they let you down. Now, someone is, you know, in your relationship, they've gone and slept with somebody else, and they've broken up the marriage, whatever. It's, you know, you do learn next time to be a bit more careful with, you know, who you partner. And getting angry at them, you didn't do anything wrong. They were the ones who were unfaithful. So why should you suffer? Why are you suffering? So you just let it go, learn from it, and just next time be a bit more careful with who you choose. And little things like that is just how we can actually change. But oh, just one more little story about forgiveness. This I just recall giving a talk in Malaysia at a university once. And you know, sometimes we should forgive our partner more. I mean, that's, you know, infidelity is a big thing. But sometimes your partner does small things and you still give them a hard time. It's not really worth it. Because this talk in Malaysia once, at the question time, this middle-aged lady, she stood up and she said this question. It was one of the toughest questions because it was really honest. She said, I caught my husband lying to me this morning. He lied to me. I can't trust him anymore. Should I get divorced? That was the question. And then before I answered, I asked her, I said, well, at this university, what are you doing? She was actually a teacher at maths at the university. And I asked her, how long have you been married? She said, about 3 years. And I saw my opportunity to answer her question. I said, okay, you're teaching math, let's do some statistics together. You've been married 3 years, that's maybe 1,000 days. And let's assume that, you know, over those 3 years of marriage, your husband has said on average 20 things to you every day, which could be right, which could be wrong. That's quite a conservative estimate. So 20 things to you every day which could be right, which could be wrong, and you've been married 1,000 days. So that's 20,000 statements which could be right, which could be wrong. And now he's lied to you for the first time. According to probability theory, on his past record, the next time he opens his mouth, there's a 20,000-to-1 chance he's telling the truth. That sounds pretty trustworthy to me. And she understood straight away and stayed married. Why is it that one lie stands out so much that we forget all the truthful things he said? That is the reason why we don't forgive. Because one mistake is all we see, and we don't see all the other parts of that person. They're not a bad person, no matter what you say. You're not a bad person, no matter what you think. So when you put it in perspective, you find it's easy to forgive. See the other part of the person. The part which deserves to be forgiven. And then when you see they deserve forgiveness, it's easy to give that forgiveness. And quite frankly, when you forgive someone, they've done a very bad thing. It's such a wonderful gift you give to them. So they'll always respect you for it. There was one couple, Australian, married to a Japanese. And she caught him. She found receipts in his pocket, going to a brothel. They were married. And she was so upset, she wanted to just divorce. But of course, they came to see me, first of all. And so I talked her out of it. and had talked him into promising in front of me that he would never, ever, 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 ever do that again. And I talked him into forgiving him. But, parole. He was parole for 1 year. And if he behaved, then he'd be forgiven. And he did his 1 year parole. And now they're together, they come every week to Boding Down and Monastery to give food. Because we kept them together. And it's much better keeping together. Yeah, he did a terrible thing, a stupid thing. We all do bad things and mistakes. Wouldn't you like to be forgiven for your mistakes? I like to be forgiven for the fact I chanted the funeral service at a marriage. I like to be forgiven for all the stupid things which I've done. Wouldn't you? So if you give forgiveness, you give a beautiful act of compassion to the world. You allow people to make mistakes. They're not the end of the world mistakes. You can forgive. And you learn. The most important thing with forgiveness is you learn from it so you don't do it again. And that way we become better human beings. Happier human beings. And also human beings who can live with each other even though they're not perfect. Trees in the forest, all crooked and bent. And they're the most beautiful. Okay, any questions? Comment? Complaints?
Did you have the sense of humour when you were a little kid?
Oh, yeah. No, it was... it was... in my blood. Because my father always used to tell jokes. I remember him coming home one day and said, terrible news. A cousin of ours, he had a motorbike accident, and he said he had to go straight into the hospital and unfortunately had to have a leg amputated. But the terrible thing was, it does happen. Because of the emergency, they rushed him in there and they amputated the wrong leg. It happens. And then, as soon as they realised their mistake, they had to wheel him straight back into surgery and amputate the other leg as well. Because it was disease, he couldn't have it. So as soon as he got better, he got a lawyer and he sued the hospital. But he lost the case. He didn't have a leg to stand on. But that was one of my dad's jokes. There's no hope. I was conditioned for the time I was that high. Totally. That is that a favourite joke? Which is very pertinent to my life these days. He always used to say, what fun does a monk have? And the answer? None. Which is not true. I have a lot of fun, and it's not with the girls of Dhammasara. So, it's good to laugh at yourself as well. Very good. Okay, that's it, folks. For tonight, thanks again. 28 years. Oh, and you still won't let me retire.